have two boys, 4 years old and 2 years old. And I think for me, just one of the biggest challenges is just balancing both of their needs and trying to figure out what my rules are and consequences in the midst of tantrums and just everything else going on in my life.
Eva Daniel is one of our guests today on Focus on the Family, and we're talking about those typical frustrations and feelings of inadequacy that we all have as parents. Your host is Focus President Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and we're going to take some of the stress out of your parenting, especially if you have toddlers.
Well, John, I can appreciate what Eva is describing there, and I think she speaks not only for herself as a mom of toddlers, but for moms of toddlers everywhere. And it will be fun to talk more with her. She's actually one of our producers here at Focus on the Family and does such a terrific job. And we're also going to talk to one of our very own, Tim Sanford, who's with the counseling department and speaks to many people every day about difficulties they have in parenting and marriage and other family-related matters. And both Tim and Eva, welcome to Focus.
Thanks. Well, thank you. Good to be here.
It's hard. You walked in today working. So welcome to the studio, I should say. Well,
thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
It is great to have you. Tim, you've written this book, The Low Pressure Guide to Parenting Your Preschooler. Eva, you probably lit up when you saw that, right?
Yeah, I'm living it right now.
You like low pressure?
I like low pressure. Don't necessarily experience it, but okay. I like the idea of low pressure.
Some of us, I'm back in that with our foster kids, but you know, I didn't think at my age, in my 50s, I would have a 3 and 5 year old at the house. And that is what some people do, but man, it is exhausting. I forgot how much energy it requires, and I give Jean the gold medal of parenting right now because she has got every end burning on that candle, and she's tired. There's so much going on, and she feels really inadequate. So, Eva, let's start. I want you to just paint that picture for those that might not have been in that groove of parenting toddlers for a few years. Describe your day.
Well, it is very constant all of the time, just everything going on. I have two boys, Noah, who's 4 and a half, and Peter, who's 2 and a half. And typical boy mom, every day ends with, "Mommy, smell my feet," because, you know, that's what every mom wants to end her day with. But it's very, very busy. Lots of typical boy, lots of climbing, lots of energy, lots of breaking of my things, lots of shoveling food and spilling it on the ground that I clean up. And it just feels like there's a lot going on all of the time. And they're both very demanding with different things. And then at times, some nights they sleep great. And I'm a nice human. They slept great last night. So luckily for that. And then
mom
other
got
days,
some sleep too.
Mom got some sleep. And then other nights, you know, they'll just still wake up at 2 and 4 for whatever reason. Nightmare, you know, I drop my lammy, whatever. And so then I'm up in the middle of the night and very tired a lot.
Tim, she's describing the real world of parenting the toddler. You've written this book. That's normative. What additional things would you add to that? The stress, the pressure, parents that are out of control?
Part of what I see a lot is good parents are wanting to do a good job of it. And as you look at, okay, I need to read these 55 books, visit those 75 websites, I got to do this, I got to do that, and it's overwhelming because there's so much information on what to do and how to do it that the pressure gets added on either vicariously or we add on to ourselves of, I need to do everything and do it all correctly in the right way. And oh, by the way, here's another book out on telling me what I'm not doing right. I need to do it. And that's where a lot of the additional stress and pressure that we can take care of is coming from, I think.
Now, you have two grown daughters. How old are your daughters now?
They're both in their 30s.
Okay.
Married 10 years and 9 years.
Yeah, so you've gone through it, the whole cycle, actually, adolescence. And your daughter's personalities were quite different, right? Which is typical for kids. Eva, your kids are probably quite different.
Polar opposites.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Daughters, too?
Two daughters, 2 years apart, best of friends, best of enemies, and very different.
Okay, so we as parents, we try to get in and referee all of this, especially if we haven't parented very long. I mean, we're talking toddlers, so we might have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, kind of like where you're at, Eva. What is a good way to deal with some of this energy and some of the, I think you call them in the book, the shoulds?
Well, to start with, and it was when our girls were actually in high school that my wife and I compared notes, and we both had this aha moment when our kids were toddlers, separate from each other, not knowing it. But I remember from mine, it was when our older daughter was 20-something months old or one of those things, and she was sleeping. And they're always cute and pretty and angelic, you know, when they're sleeping.
Absolutely.
And I leaned over and I said, "Listen, kid, you've never been a kid before. I've never been a dad before. We're both rookies, and I hope we both survive. And it didn't do anything for her because she's sleeping, but it took a lot of that pressure off of me as the dad. Back to you mentioned the shoulds. I should do this. I shouldn't do that. I have to do it right. And one of the things that gets inadvertently put into our job description as a parent is it's my job to do everything right.
Huh.
And that is a big no-no in a job description that does not belong there.
Wow.
Because that's where a lot of that pressure of, you're growing up with them. I mean, you've never been a mom of two rambunctious boys before. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, you'll never be a mom when they get into high school. You have two high school boys. You're still a rookie. You're growing up with them.
Do you feel that, Eva? Can you feel what Tim's saying there?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I think there's just a lot of the pressure, like you were saying, of I feel like I should know how to do this, but I was the youngest of three girls. Here I'm the mother of two boys. I have no idea what I'm doing.
In fact, you are training for a half marathon.
Half marathon.
You were describing before we went to air here your training routine, and that is to have the two kids in a stroller that you're running behind and pushing while you have the dog on a leash.
I forgot to mention
to
my third child. Yes, I also have a puppy because that's a good life choice when you have little kids.
Just to envision you tumbling down the road, if I were driving by, I'd go, look at that poor woman.
I know, you'd feel sorry. You give me a ride. Maybe that's what I need.
It's a great illustration where you're at.
It is. I mean, that sounds crazy. Yeah. I would
it
tie the dog
crazy.
Up and the kids too.
I don't recommend getting a puppy or training for a half marathon while having toddlers.
But Tim, how does she manage that? How does a mom manage all the demands on her and still be joyful at night when dad walks through the door?
Well, and part of the thing is, I think, is we need an accurate job description to start with.
What does it look like?
I mean, each of us have our job description here at Focus on the Family. Our listeners have job descriptions. And the thing is we don't have a clear job description for a mom or a dad. It's too muddled out there.
Huh.
So one of the things in the low-pressure parenting guide is here is a good, accurate job description. And for dads, let me start with dads. Dads, your number one, above all else, goal, this is the critical one, everything else behind this is gravy, okay, is you need to validate your kids. Hmm. And that is your job description. That means you're okay, kid. You're an okay kid. You're my kid. You belong here, over and over and over again. You validate that kid. That is the critical job description that a dad has.
Tim, before you move on, because some of us dads can be a bit bullheaded or we don't hear you. Why is that so critical? What's the end product in that child if dad did not do those things?
The reason that validation is so important is if it's missing or not there enough, okay, that puts the kid on a trajectory of it's me against the world. It's almost a survival mindset. That creates that this is a safe world. I belong here. My world is looking out for me. My dad is looking out for me. I exist. I'm okay. The world is safe. Okay, now I can grow up and go on.
Huh.
If that's missing or not there enough, it in a sense creates a visual word picture is the kid feels like he's grown up in Vietnam. It's a jungle, it's a firefight, it's do or die, it's me all by myself, and then I got to do whatever I have to do. It's that big of a difference if the validation is not there.
Wow.
And so that's why I say it's critical.
How about let's go ahead and cover the moms while we're there. That's a dad's impact. Would moms be similar?
The number one critical job description point for a mom is that nurturing. And I'm not a mom, so I had to go to moms to figure out how to word that best. But most moms have that natural sense. It's that pouring life into. It's that eye to eye, smile to smile, tear to tear. It's that good kind of fussing that moms can do. And if that is there, okay, then it is mission accomplished for mom. If it's missing or not there enough, okay, then that throws the child into that same kind of do or die, it's me against
trauma.
The world, trauma kind of. But no, the thing about there's two ways for a child to get really deeply hurt. One is to have trauma happen to them.
Right.
Okay. This is a lack of good happening to them.
Right.
So how do you point to avoid? See, and a lot of kids go, my parents didn't abuse me. They didn't hurt me. They were there. So there's no trauma existing. What's there is that what was necessary and critical is missing.
Right.
And if these two pieces are missing or not enough, then that kid grows up in that it's me against the world mindset.
Now, you talk in your book, The Low Pressure Guide to Parenting Your Preschooler, you talk about giving your preschooler a voice. Now, Eva, I can imagine you're going, what?
They have man, lots of voices.
Yeah, they got voice. It's not the problem.
They have voice.
But so what do you mean by giving your preschooler a voice? Most parents are going, that sounds exhausting.
It can be exhausting. And it's not that you really give them a voice. God already gave them a voice.
So how do you let that
play out? Let's
go back
to the book of Genesis, free will, okay? And how do you let that play out is, number one, you can voice what you want and say. Number two, I will reiterate what I just heard you say. Doesn't mean I'm going to give in. Okay. I heard you say you want 5 gallons of ice cream. I heard that, Jimmy. Okay. See? So, okay.
Now so comes, just like my mom.
Okay. Now comes, no, you can't have that. So it's letting them speak, reiterating back to them what you heard them say, and then whenever you can, give them options, give them choices.
You can have 1 ounce or 1 pound, but not 5 pounds.
Exactly. Okay. Or you can eat, you know, you can eat your spinach before the hot dog or after the hot dog. Now, as a parent, you're going to eat the spinach.
Okay. So there's a certain percentage of children, my guess would be, that say, okay, I'll eat it before the hot dog. And some will say after. There still are those, and I'm thinking, Eva, you might have one of them, and I do too, who says, great, I'm not going to eat it before or after, Dada. Mm-hmm.
And then that's where that is not an option.
Okay. Right. What do you do, though?
Okay. And with this, then part of this, and I was talking to a mom just not too long ago, going, it's hard because after a while, by the end of the day, I'm running out of option ideas.
Right.
You know, and not everything is going to be an option every single time. When you can give options, okay, so if it's the blue shirt or the green shirt, it doesn't matter to me. Or if it's the blue shirt, green shirt, or red shirt, I don't care. And so when I can, as often as can, give them those options when they can. Mm. Now, when there's not an option, when it is a must do, you can either obey, and here's the benefits. If you choose to disobey, here's the consequences. Because you know good and well, a 2-year-old, if they don't want to swallow, they're not going to swallow.
You can't force them.
You can't force them. And that's the part where we don't want to fight that. We have to work with it because that's that free will that God gave them.
Tim, temperament has to play in here. And that's, I think, what Eve and I are responding to. You're going to have that compliant child that says, I'll eat all the spinach you give me, Dad. I love spinach. And
we
have one of those. But then we have that other one who is like, do whatever you want. I'm not eating that spinach. It tastes yucky. How do you deal with that really strong-willed child? I know you mentioned consequences. What are some of the consequences that you can apply to those strong-willed children that you seem to be fighting with each and every day? Is that fair, Eva?
Yeah, that's fair, because I appreciated what you just said there, Tim, about the choices and on the color of the shirt. But my 2-year-old, if I say you can, you know, wear the green shirt or the blue shirt, or even pick out a shirt from your drawer, I don't care. He goes, not going to wear a shirt. No shirt. No shirt. And so then I feel a little left. Well, you actually do need to wear a shirt because we're going to the store or to church or whatever. And so then it becomes this big battle where it's like, I'm giving you a choice.
Yeah. One idea is this a hill worth fighting and dying on?
Right.
I mean, if he's going outside and it's summertime, does he have to really have a shirt? No. Now you say, but it's wintertime and it's snow outside. Well, does he have to have a shirt? Yeah, but no, because he'll be back in 30 seconds if he goes without one. And part of this, particularly with those rambunctious kind of boys, sometimes girls as well, they need to learn experientially. So if he wants to go outside without a shirt on in the wintertime, let him.
Experience it.
Let him experience, because he's going to be back in.
Okay, now, Tim, you're really messing with the parenting motif, especially of Christians who want to do everything perfectly again.
Okay.
And if we have a child out there, or we take a child to the store without a shirt on, and the parents are looking and it's glaring at us like, how could you do that? Deal with the kind of the parenting issue of looking like the perfect parent. My kids are under control. They're dressed perfectly. But in reality...
Or dressed.
In Eva's case.
Well, let's go back to the job description. There's two things that are not on a parent's job description. Okay. Number one, it's not your job to make sure your kids turn out right.
Okay. Now that raises a few hairs on the head of people.
So let me go back to the book of Genesis. Okay? The first house, Garden of Eden, perfect place. No dust, no nothing bad, a perfect house. In this perfect house is a perfect parent, God. Okay, you with me?
Uh-huh.
Perfect parent, perfect house, perfect two children, Adam and Eve. And in this perfect house with perfect parents and perfect children, there's a rule. Don't eat of that tree or else you'll die. You can't get better than that. That's clear. So on this chapter 3 day, where God is watching Adam and Eve walk towards the tree that's clearly forbidden of, does he stop them?
Hmm. No.
No. He didn't care? Yeah, he cared. Yeah, he knew. And this is where that free will come into play. Okay? And so now you're going, but if it's my job to make sure my kids turn out right, which is what a lot of Christians tend to think, then God screwed up because his kids didn't turn out right. So it's God's fault, right? See, you're not going to tell me, no, it's not God's fault.
Yeah, it's a bitter pill to swallow.
And it is, and yet that's the reality of it. It's not your job. That's your desire. That's your heart. You bet, because you're a good parent. It's not your job to make sure your kids turn out right.
That's great insight, Tim. But for someone in Eva's shoes who's feeling the daggers come out from judgmental parents, how could you possibly, it's November, it's Colorado, how could you possibly let your kid go outside without a shirt? I mean, there are all sorts of implications for the adult. I hear what you're saying, give the kid a choice, let him learn by getting cold. But how does a mom or a dad of a toddler say, yeah, I'll handle all those withering judgmental looks I get?
Which brings us to the second point that is not on your job description, and that's to do everything correctly and right. Mm. That's your desire. And that's where the pressure comes from many times, is other parents or other church members or other family members or our own parents
or
our siblings or our spouse. And that's where those shoulds and shouldn'ts come in and start to build. And that's where the pressure comes, the pressure that doesn't need to be there. I mean, parenting is hard enough as it is. Mm-hmm. You got two boys, they're rambunctious, yeah. But that's where the pressure comes that's really damaging and hurtful to the parent. And that's where, okay, back to my job description. God, this is what you gave me to do. My job as a dad is to validate my kids. My job as a mom is to nurture them best I can. That is job number one. That is good job, and I'm doing well with that. Deep breath. Okay, the other people are saying stuff. Ouch. But my job is doing a good job, and that's mission accomplished.
Eva, you had a question about consequences, and I could so relate to that, where you have two kids that are close in age. You had the two daughters that are now grown. I got my two teen boys. You've got your two toddler boys. Mm-hmm. John, you've got the whole gamut.
We've got some close together, yes.
The point of that is, especially when you're in families with two kids, because the competition is so rife and it's there, and it's just there. So when you have one child who does something that is not appropriate, and you're going to land the consequences to where we're not going to go see the latest good kid movie or whatever, and it impacts the other child who's not doing something, does not deserve a harsh consequence. How do you negotiate that when you're... Is that the example? Oh. Do you have another example like that?
Well, totally. I struggle a lot with consequences for actions because, as I've expressed, my youngest is my strong-willed child, and my oldest is compliant most of the time. And so I think, well, a good consequence would be for my youngest, if you're not getting in your car seat and you're throwing a fit because you want to do everything yourself, we're not going to go to the playground. But then that doesn't feel fair to the four-year-old who's got in his seat with a great attitude and is excited to go. So what is the good consequence? Because once they're older, I remember as a sibling, the peer pressure of your siblings makes you kind of behave because maybe when they are teens, well, no one gets to go to the movie and then your, you know, sister rips into you about it. And so I see when it's older, you kind of have the peer pressure of consequences. But when they're 2 and 4, you know, the four-year-old is
shouldn't
not
always suffer.
Yeah, shouldn't always suffer. So how do you find that
balance?
There's
one of those shouldn'ts.
Well done.
Well, part of that has to do with what's the reason for rules in the first place. Okay, because when you have consequences, consequence means there's a rule that's been broken. Rules are not for behavior. They're for safety.
Ah.
Okay, teaching, instruction, do-overs, and natural consequences are for behavior. So one of the things that I do with parents a lot of times is say, okay, you can only have 5 rules in the whole house.
That's it. I like that.
Just 5. and each point cannot have 65 subpoints. I actually had a mom come in one time with 6 pages typed, single-spaced, 5 rules, but each one had about 20-something subpoints under it. Rules. And I'm going, so I looked at page number 4 and went, okay, so what's point number 72?
Well, and the reality is that is suffocating to a child because they don't know what to do.
And they're not. And if they're 4, they're not going to keep track of 6 pages. Right. And you can't keep track of 6 pages either. So think about it. First of all, the rules are for safety, physical, emotional, spiritual. That's for safety. The rest now, yeah, we still need to get to the park. We still need to obey. That's where the teaching, the training, and with kids, a lot of times, the do-over is what's real helpful.
So she gives her son a chance to do over, and he still says no. Could she just, I mean, would one solution be, all right, when we get to the park, then you're just going to sit and
have a timeout?
You're going to sit next to me on the bench for an extra 10 or 15 minutes?
And that's a creative alternative of, okay, because here's your choice. You either obey, which is what you need to do, and we know that as parents. If you disobey, when we finally do get there, yeah, you miss out. Mm. So it actually... To start with, it takes more work because you got to be thinking instead of, no, just stop, don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's still at the same time giving them, number one, their voice. But there's also a consequence of, yeah, when you do something that's not so okay, here's a consequence. But that's different than here's a rule of the house. And when you break a rule, there's a consequence that comes down.
And, you know, Tim, so often temperament is going to play into this. If you're a task-oriented person, and a task-oriented parent, you've got to recognize the way God has wired you and dial down those tendencies to have 64 rules and 137 sub-rules, right? Because that's typical of that personality type.
Well, and it's also behind, are you trying to control their behavior?
Right.
See, a 2-year-old will tell you real well, you can't control them.
That's amazing if you think about that. Just stop for a minute, Mom and Dad. Think of that. What Tim is saying, your 2-year-old, you cannot control. You can only shape.
And you can modify their behaviors, you can encourage, you can direct. And that's exactly what God did in the Garden of Eden. He did not control.
Right.
He shaped and reshaped. He redirected.
It's very unsettling, though, Tim.
It's
much easier to go through this life controlling your environment.
Well, it's easier to go through with the illusion that I can control my environment.
Right.
There's the specific, because you can't control your environment no matter how much you
That's
try.
That's the reality.
You have the illusion.
Talk about grace, the importance of grace, and how that works into parenting, because that's the antidote, isn't it, for control, is grace. You know, the fact that we're not perfect parents, as you said earlier, you're not a perfect child, we're all sinners saved by grace. How do you infuse grace into your parenting?
With that is realizing my job is to influence. And I have a tremendous power as a parent to influence.
That almost sounds like Jesus would have said his mission was. My job here is to speak to the truth and influence people, but you can accept me or reject me.
Exactly. And God has always given us choices. Now, that choice is very powerful. And so part of my job as a parent is to teach, number one, that you have that choice. There's that voice we talked about. Number two, that voice, that choice, that's powerful. So number three, you need to learn how to use it wisely.
Hmm.
And so that's where the shaping, the do-overs, the teaching, the mentoring, the do-overs, all those come into play because it is powerful. And I want you to have that because if you grow up without a voice, you become an easy target for anybody and everybody that wants to make you a victim because you won't speak up, you won't stand up, you won't have a voice, and you'll be run over.
Wow. And that's not what you want as a parent
No.
for your children. Tim, you've summarized it so well right there. Your book, The Low-Pressure Guide to Parenting Your Preschooler, it's a great book.
Thanks, Jim.
And Eva, thank you for what you're doing, helping produce programs and being that great mom I know you want to be. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
And our program was provided by Focus on the Family. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
That was such practical and sound advice from Tim Sanford today, helping parents of toddlers with the idea of giving options and choices to our kids, but then also offering some great ideas on consequences for the child who is defiant and disobedient. It can be difficult for parents of toddlers because those little people are always testing the boundaries. And that is only compounded when it comes to the strong-willed child. But I hope that you've come away with a little more insight and hope after today's discussion. Tim Sanford has penned a lot of the ideas mentioned and more in his book called The Low Pressure Guide to Parenting Your Preschooler. The purpose of this book is to liberate parents from the expectations of having to be super parents and relieves the pressure to follow long lists of rules to be perfect. You can get your copy when you call us on 031-716-3300 or you'll find it on our website at safamily.co.za. And while you're on the website, please take a look at our Christmas catalogue. We have everything from Bibles and books to bags to make sure that you have the perfect gift for those special people in your life. It'll be a gift that has value and you'll be supporting the ministry when you buy a resource from us. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to tune in next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.